All right, well, good morning. Good morning, good morning, good morning. My name is Dylan Wagoner, and this is the secret Walmart in the woods. You ever seen a Walmart in the woods? Yes. Well, you have seen one in the woods. All right, well, there is one out there, and I'm not sponsored by Walmart, by the way, by any means, but we're going to talk about wild, edible, and medicinal plants. This has been an interest of mine for 30 years. I'm 38, so kind of started when I was about 8 years old, and I think we're going to have a lot of fun together, but before we do that, it'd be a good idea to pray, so let's do that. Our Father in heaven, we thank you for this beautiful morning, a crisp morning here in Texas, and we just ask that you would just help us, Lord, as we're trying to learn more about nature. Goodness, I'm still learning every day, and I just pray that as we learn together, might add some value to people's lives, and we ask this all in the name of Jesus. Amen. All right, and it disappeared. There we go. Oh, the color is so much better. Excellent. So this right here, this presentation, if you would like, you could scan that QR code. I was having some problems with it last night. You could either scan the QR code now or it will be uploaded with Audioverse on their website, the whole PDF file. You could wait until that gets uploaded too. I was having some issues though, but see if it works for you. I was up a little bit late trying to fix it. All right, so is this on a timer or is it changing automatically? You gotta click for me. Okay, so should we swap out the clicker or should I just say next slide?
Just say next slide, we're good.
All right, cool. I don't necessarily consider myself an expert, just like foraging. Like I said, I've done it for about 30 years, and I have a lot of experience out in the woods. I've read a lot of books, watched a lot of YouTube, read a lot of websites, but I just like it, and I'm just going to share what I've learned in the past couple decades. Next slide, please. To get this out of the way, I want you to know that the following presentation is for informational purposes. Is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. If you want to live a long and happy life, research well before attempting to use any wild plant. Wild plants are amazing. There's a lot of power. There's a lot of benefits to a lot of wild plants. Some of them will make you full and well-satisfied and maybe even more well in general. And some of them will make you dead. So you have to be very careful what you're doing. All right, next slide, please. There's a story in the Bible, by the way, you think, is foraging in the Bible? It absolutely is. You probably heard the story, Elisha and the school of the prophets, they get hungry, so they start a fire and they put a big pot on it. Elisha's like, hey, let's go find some herbs in the wild, and so they're gathering all these greens and herbs, and one guy, it says, he went out in the field to gather herbs, he found a wild vine and gathered from it a lapful of wild gourds, and he came and sliced them into the pot of stew, and here's the really scary part. And he did not know what it was. So he slices up all these wild gourds, throws it in the pot. Everyone's like, wow, they pray and they start eating. And suddenly they start yelling, there's death in the pot! Don't eat it! And Elisha takes a handful of flour, throws it in the pot, and miraculously, it's detoxified. Now, do you think a handful of flour would neutralize the poison in a pot of poisonous stew? No, it was a miracle, right? The same way that the stick floating on the river didn't make the axe head float, and likely, probably the same way that the mud on the blind man's eyes didn't make him see again. It was a miracle. It was some sort of method to it. At any rate, foraging's in the Bible, and it's a great reminder for us to be very, very sure what we're picking, what we're eating, and what we're using. I'll tell you a little story maybe about cattails and how I guessed wrong. It's one of the only times I really guessed wrong, and I had to pay for it. I'll tell you that story later. It'll be great. All right. It wasn't great in the moment. Let's go to the next slide, please. This right here actually is bitter apple. This is extremely likely what that young man had picked up. It grows in the Middle East, and it's a gourd, and it fits the description quite well. So this is probably what he picked up and threw in that pot. And the seeds are useful and edible, I think, if you roast them. But the fruit is, as the name implies, bitter and not very palatable at all. I think it has a lot of alkaloids in it. Okay, next. Now here's some foraging tools you can use. We're in this modern era. You may take a picture of this, and you can, or you can use it. You can scan your phone on these QR codes. These are, I'm not exactly sure why some of the lettering is moved like that, but at any rate, the one on the left is picture this, and the one on the right is plant snap. These are two apps that are pretty good. My favorite is picture this, the one on the left. Plant snap's also good. They're not 100% accurate, though. If you go up to a plant and you take a picture of it, I think probably in the 90 percentile, somewhere in that range, it'll tell you the right plant. But every now and then it does get it wrong. And so you got to verify using other sources as well. Does everyone have a chance to see that? Okay. By the way, you'll have access to this presentation later. Next slide, please. Oh, sweet. Whew. You know, that's not what I planned. No, it really doesn't work. All right, here we go. Negative and positive. Here we go. Oh, excellent. Now, here's a small sample of the hundreds of foraging books that you can buy and check out. There was a book written decades ago by a man named Yule Gibbons called Stalking the Wild Asparagus. And that book is probably responsible for this modern revival of wild food foraging. And since then, hundreds of books have been published. These are some of them. The Peterson Guides are really good. The Skillful Forager and the Forager's Harvest are just dynamite. Fantastic. And then there's Nature's Garden and the Forager's Handbook. Really, really good. And then Samuel Thayer, you'll see on the one all the way on the right, Incredible Wild Edibles. He is, anything he writes is awesome. So those are some good books. Like I say, there's hundreds of others. Can I move on? Okay. And there are foraging books for practically every region of the world, or at least certainly in America, in the Western world, but there's other parts of the world where there are books and resources, and we'll show how you can get that information too if you don't happen to live in America or Canada or something like that. But you'll see here there's wild edible plants in New Mexico, foraging in Tennessee, and the one on the right there is medicinal plants that grow native in Puerto Rico. So you can, there's just all kinds of resources. Here's another few tips. You can Google it. Back in the old days, I used to Google, and I didn't know what the plant was. I'd be like, five-petal, yellow flower, purple stamen, jagged leaves, Missouri. And I just type that in Google and go through all the images until I found what I was looking for. That's a way to do it. It's not always accurate either, but it's a way. Another little trick and tip is to use a PDF or to find a PDF. And you can use this for other things too. For instance, you can go to Google and you can say, how to grow an avocado tree, PDF. And there are agricultural extensions and colleges and universities who put out practically books on how to do things. All kinds of stuff. You could type in how to make a wood gas generator PDF, and you'll find a whole book for free that's been produced by some U.S. department. And you'll see that as well. So you can go and you'll be like, wild edible plants of Romania. You know, you can Google that. Or you can then check out if there's a PDF there. So that's another good option. You can find a local expert. You can ask your grandparents. This is something, it seems like as the older generation passes away, they're just losing so much knowledge and so much wisdom that they just knew innately from their parents growing up. And I think, what a great opportunity for us to keep it going. We can do that. YouTube, Facebook groups are great too. You can be like, you know, if you live in North Dakota, you'd be like North Dakota Foraging. And look for Facebook groups like that. There's going to be probably some group there that's going to do that. All right. Here's some foraging principles. I hope the text is big enough. I tried to make it as big as it would fit. Looks like it's running off the page a little bit. Roots are best harvested in late autumn or winter. The reason for that is that all the energy in the plant that was all summer was trying to make a flower, which is really the sole purpose of a plant, a flowering plant that is to reproduce. All that energy is going to go down in the roots in the winter. So late autumn and winter is best time to get roots. course, it's also the hardest time to discover where they're at. So if you can go to the hardware store and buy 100 of those marker flags that sometimes construction workers will buy, it's like a wire with a little flag on top. You can even write on that flag what it is. Just put that down right where that plant is and like, hey, this is sassafras or whatever. That's a great way to mark it later when you want to come dig it up. The roots will be a lot more potent in the winter. Leaves are best harvested in spring and summer before flowering. Harvest flowers when they're just hitting full bloom, unless buds are what you're looking for. It does look like the text is just kind of running off there, but I think we'll make it work. Harvest fruit when it's ripe and soft, and harvest seeds and nuts when fully ripe, developed, and or dry. That's just a good practice. Here's some more foraging principles. Get permission. Don't be afraid to ask. If foraging on private land, offer to give the owner some of what you collect or a tasty food product made from what you foraged. I tell you, this works. It's worked 100% of the time for me. I'm driving by somewhere, I'm like, oh, look at all that stuff. And it's some guy's, you know, the edge of his woods or a meadow. I'm like, my goodness, there's a huge plot of echinacea there or bachelor's button or something. Just pull in there and be like, hey, knock on their door. This is probably a little unusual. You probably don't get this request, but I happen to be driving by and I noticed you've got, you know, these trees growing or this plant growing. I'm kind of a wild foods forager. I'm curious, would you allow me to forage on your land? And I'd be more than willing to give you some of the produce, or I could make something tasty or useful out of it and give back to you as a gift. That's worked 100% of the time. My wife and I have gotten truckloads of apples from people who just let them fall on the ground. And we do that, we make them a nice apple pie and bring it back as a thank you. Man, that works perfectly every time. For me, anyway. BLM land in U.S. National Forests are usually legal to forage fruits, nuts, and mushrooms. Foraging is not legal in many state parks, but some are okay, so be sure to check ahead of time. And of course, you might forage your own land quite freely. When I was... I'm not sure why the font is changing, too. That's interesting. Something funky. When I was in the Outer Banks one time fishing, early one morning, I happened to notice these beautiful plants, and I thought, well, I don't know what those are, but I picked off a seed head and put it in my tackle box, and later I was walking away from the sound there where I was fishing, and a guy says, hey, I got to talking to him, and he looks at my tackle box, and he goes, you're not going to take those, are you? I was like, well, I don't know. I'm not sure what it is. It looks kind of cool. Maybe I could grow it at home. He's like, nope. $10,000 fine. Okay. I said, what is it? He goes, well, they're sea oats. And they plant those on the dunes, and the roots go down, and they hold the dunes together whenever storms come. And you cannot take any seeds away from here. Oh, good grief. All right. So out went the seeds, and I walked on. So it's good to know what the local rules and laws are. Man, I just can't hardly imagine if I'd have gotten fined for that completely unaware. Is there some way to make the screen, like, fit better, I wonder? I don't know. I wonder if somebody back in the booth could kind of make that screen fit a little bit better. It seems like the lyrics are kind of running off the lyrics. The writing is running off of the page there. I just want you to know that I am not a doctor. And I almost wish I had my laptop here. What did I say? Be sure to just research well, verify the efficacy of all of these wild plants and medicinals that are mentioned, and we'll move on. So, dandelion. This is a good place to start. I went and I was thinking, man, these people are coming from all over the country, maybe even out of the country, but let's just say people come from all different regions of America, and mostly Americans here, I believe. And so I thought, what am I going to talk about? Because, you know, there's things that grow in Arizona that don't grow in Maine, and there's things that grow in Washington that might not grow in Florida. And so I really tried to find plants that grow on a broad spectrum of, like, the biggest chunk of the continental United States. And so dandelion is, entire plant is edible. You'll notice that the leaves are deeply toothed like a lion. That's where the name comes from. And it's thought that they were brought over on purpose by the pilgrims on the Mayflower because it was such a useful plant in the old world, they wanted to bring it to the new world. Isn't that great? It is great. I know people have this war against dandelions, but I love them. The leaves do taste better if they're blanched, and blanching really is just, if you don't know, it's to take something and put it in boiling water and then immediately put it in ice cold water, and that blanches it. It takes away that bitterness. The fresh flower petals go well on salad. This is a great starter plant. You take some of the flower petals and sprinkle them on salad, and people will be like, hey, what is this? Like, oh, I just picked it in the yard. Cool. It's a great way to get started. The flower heads can be breaded and cooked. Some people fry them. Roots can be roasted for coffee substitute. My wife and I like to drink a coffee substitute that's like chicory and dandelion. You're probably familiar with that. The tires can be made from them, which is actually a huge push lately being made by some companies to make tires from dandelions. The latex is quite useful. And that latex also may treat warts. By the way, who's ever tasted dandelion latex? Is it good? It's incredibly bitter. You'll see the nutrition there, and you also see the range of dandelion is all over the place. It's even in Hawaii, Puerto Rico, Virgin Islands, Alaska. It's all over the place. Very, very successful plant. There's some dandelion lookalikes. The good news is that none of these lookalikes are poisonous, but I would still go for the real thing. Go for the real dandelion. You're going to have the most enjoyment out of that. All right. Stinging nettle. Who likes stinging nettle? Has anybody ever, like, maybe as a kid or as an adult, accidentally just walked into a whole group of stinging nettles, maybe in shorts? You'll never forget that, will you? Stinging nettle grows in zones 4 to 10. It's one of the most nutritious wild foods out there. Absolutely incredible. A real superfood. You can eat it fresh. You can dry it, eat it powdered. You can mix it in with stews. Tastes like spinach when cooked. It goes great in lasagna. Just layer it in between the noodles. And that's a great way to get people started, too, with wild edibles. Tell them later. I heard that from a wild foods forager. I borrowed that from him, but he's like, yeah, you know, you just put it in the lasagna, and then later you tell him, by the way, you just ate stinging nettle. I'm like, well, I thought that was spinach. Do not eat or use the leaves after flowering. There's something called cystoliths. They're little, tiny, little granules in the leaf. It's not going to kill you, but it's going to irritate your urinary tract, and you're not going to like life very much if you do that. So do it before it flowers. Blanching does take the sting out, placing in boiling water and ice water. Tea from the leaves and the roots can help support people during hay fever symptoms. I use this extensively in those 2 months in the spring when I don't really like the outdoors very much during that time. And stinging nettle really helps me in that. Anyone ever use stinging nettle for that purpose? It's fantastic. It really does take the edge off. It can be juiced for a potent, nutrient-dense drink. I think there's an old folklorish tale about a guy who ate so many nettles his skin turned green. Has anybody ever juiced so many carrots their skin turned orange? I did that one time. It goes away, but it does make you look a little odd. Nettle seeds can provide a nice pick-me-up with no caffeine. I did a lot of digging into this. It does give you energy. I'm not exactly sure how. It does have a collection of various vitamins and minerals that do really perk you right up. And there's no caffeine involved, so that's a good thing. Studies with nettles have been conducted, and findings have been reported in the area of brain recovery, painful muscles and joints, arthritis, gout, eczema, anemia, large prostate, wound healing, soothing the nervous system, anti-inflammatory effects, antioxidant effects, hypoglycemia, ulcers, blood cleansing, etc., etc. And by the way, at the end of this presentation, I have footnoted everything that is health-related. Anything that I mention in this is health-related. I have documents from PubMed and the U.S. Library of Medicine and all those kind of all those documents are at the end. So if you want to research further, you can dig into that. But I'm not just pulling things out of my hat. These are things that I found on those sources. There's also a process called urtication. Urticaria is the Latin name for stinging nettle. And urtication is this kind of an odd process, but some people have like a sprained wrist or if they've got some sort of an injury, you take the stinging nettle and you smack it onto that area that already hurts, and you make it hurt worse. The beauty of that, though, or at least the idea, is that it stimulates blood circulation and it can help you recover faster. It's a whole world called urtication, and people do this. I've done it, and it worked for me. That's my experience, but you can do what you want. Let's see here. It's packed with nutrition, just absolutely loaded. I'm going to keep moving on. I've got a lot of material here, so hope you don't mind if I kind of just blitz through these. And like I say, this will be available. You can go over it longer in the future. The bast fibers in the nettle stalk are really, really valuable. In fact, there's also a revival of people using nettle fabric. And in World War I, when England kind of had the corner on cotton, the Germans ran out of cotton, and so they made their soldiers' uniforms out of nettle fiber, which I think is kind of interesting. And it's a very durable fiber. It's kind of like hemp. All right. Everybody enjoying themselves? Okay. We're going to talk about tree nuts. Tree nuts are probably one of the most underused and underappreciated sources of calories in the woods. I mean, it's just amazing that in a typical woods, you might have millions of nuts laying on the ground at one point before the squirrels get them and the weevils. But it's just an incredible, incredible source of calories. This is my, as you can see, I love it so much. I even put a little loving emoji at the top there. I love shagbark hickory so much. Anyone ever eat a shagbark hickory? You ever eat that? Oh, it takes a lot of work to get to the nut meat, but my goodness, what a reward. It's in the pecan family, or pecan, however you say it. And they are fantastic. We just bought some land in Tennessee, and to my joy, I found at least one shagbark hickory tree on it. And I'm going to be planting more. Just have to wait like 50 years before they get nuts. That's all. Maybe it's 30. It takes a while. So you can see it's kind of roughly the eastern half of America is the native area. Shagbark hickory is just an absolute favorite. Here's my kids and I. We're popping the hulls off the outside of the nuts. We got a really good haul that day, pun intended. there's a big old bowl of them right there, and they store well. One thing you're going to want to do with tree nuts is take a look at them from all angles and make sure there's not a little tiny hole in it. And sometimes that hole might be covered up by sawdust because weevils will bore a hole in the side and they'll lay a grub in there. You'll be sadly disappointed when you crack that nut open and you find grubs crawling around in it. I know that from personal experience. So make sure that there's no holes. It's going to take a little bit longer, and sometimes they disguise their hole. The sawdust kind of covers it up. But you got to kind of get an eye for it and make sure you discard those. So there's hickory. There's acorn. You can eat acorns. You got to soak them in water, about three changes of water at least, about three changes usually. You're going to take the acorns, you're going to mash them up, and that meat inside, you're going to pop the shell off the outside, get the meat on the inside, mash it up, and soak it in a big jug or big pot of water or a barrel or whatever, and change that water out, let it sit for a day. Next day, fill it up with clean water again, pour off the old water. Do that three times, and then you're going to get all those tannins out of there and make it palatable. And you can make a flour out of it and all kinds of stuff. Butternut's cool. Had a nice butternut tree where I used to live in Ohio, and right down by the river. That was a really neat tree. And then pine nuts. I've not had very good success finding pine nuts because the birds tend to get them before I can get them. But if you can find them, good on you. Hazelnuts, also a wild tree that you'll find a lot. It's a shorter tree. There's black walnut at the top right. Chestnuts. They believe it or not, they're still American chestnuts you can find. There's also hybrids from some of the Asian chestnut varieties that have hybridized with the American variety. There used to be lots and lots of chestnut trees across a lot of America, and then there was this blight that started in, I think it was Long Island, and it spread across America, and it killed the vast majority of American chestnut trees, but there's still some left. And then there's beech trees. So, another really good source of calories in the woods. Now, by the way, there'll be an opportunity at the end here for questions. Oh, you want to go back? Okay. This one right there? Sure enough. So I got to be done here at 10:30, and we got 36 minutes left. I think we can do this. All right. So we're going to advance here to prickly pear cactus. Now this is something that's going to be growing typically in the southwest or in the southern part of the states. However, there is eastern prickly pear, which will grow as far north as Canada. So that's kind of cool. Prickly pear is something that's absolutely everywhere down here. Have you seen it? I mean, it's just everywhere. People hate it. They get rid of it. They try to destroy it. They hack it and they burn it and they stab it and they dig it up and they do all kinds of things. They can't seem to get rid of it. It's just absolutely everywhere. Matter of fact, later you'll be able to go in front of this table here and you'll see that I collected some a couple days ago around here. I'll just show you. And I also got some seeds. So to collect prickly pear, it is edible. The plant is very edible, actually. But it acts like it doesn't want to be eaten. So you're going to want heavy gloves, tongs, knife, garden shears. Propane torch is what I recommend. It's really my favorite way to do it. You burn off all of the spines, and not just the big ones. The big ones you could pluck off with a pair of pliers. But what's really going to get you are these little tiny spines that grow in little bunches. You'll see them. They look like little dots. It's like polka dotted with those. Those are what are going to get you, and they're going to bug you for days, because if the end breaks off in your finger, it's just going to irritate you forever. So make sure you use heavy gloves, and you're going to burn off those little spines especially. All right, and you can abrade those spines off too, by the way, not just burn. It grows in zones 4 to 10, though. It's pretty broad, particularly if you figure in the eastern prickly pear. There's potential for its antiviral and anti-inflammatory elements. There's Opuntia is kind of the genus, and there's a type right there. There's a species, Streptocantha stem extract may reduce blood sugar. Seeds can be roasted and ground into meal like a flour, and the fruits have a lot of seeds in them. I've eaten the fruits, but I mean you're dealing with a whole lot of seeds, but still, it's a wonderful snack. Pads can yield emergency water. Now this is what we call these pads. They look like ping pong paddles in a way, right? And if you're out in the desert somewhere and you have absolutely no water, you can definitely get emergency water from a prickly pear cactus. You can definitely do that. Not every cactus. If you ever cut into a cactus and a white milky sap or some sort of weird stuff comes out of there, do not drink that. Don't even touch it. And certainly don't put it on your fire to burn it, which is what some guys did. And I believe it took the life of one of them. So you have to be very, very careful of that. But prickly pear, totally great. May help with enlarged prostate. From the fruit, you can make juice, candies, jellies, preserves. It may help lower bad cholesterol. The fruit is antioxidant, kind of like blueberries. It's very high in fiber. Studies currently being done on its possible anti-cancer effects. A lot of studies, really interesting. You can dig a little deeper on that in the links at the end of the presentation. It may help prevent ulcers, alleviate PMS. That's anecdotal. That's what I keep seeing on websites. And there's even like supplements that they market it for PMS. But I haven't found scientific studies to back that up. So I'm calling that anecdotal. You can study that for yourself. It may aid with digestion. And the prickly pear seed oil, there's a lot of evidence that it can be very beneficial for the skin. It may help recover dry, damaged cuticles, moisturize skin, reverse aging, promote healthy, shiny hair, heal wounds, blemishes, cuts, reduces dark circles, make skin smooth and bright tone, etc. So this is really, really, really a useful plant. Isn't that funny? Some of the plants that everyone hates the most are some of the most useful. I don't know why that works that way. The seeds can be roasted and ground into meal. I think we talked about that. From the fruit we already talked about that. But the pads can be cooked. A lot of times if you're in a like a Hispanic grocery store or Mexican grocery store, you'll find prickly pear cactus pads, and they call it nopal or nopales. And you can cut it up and fry it, bake it, whatever you like, stir fry, and it tastes like green beans or asparagus. There's a little debate on that, but they taste good. I took a picture of this. Did anyone else see this? This is just down the road in Glen Rose. As I drive here every day because we're staying with my wife's cousin's house, I see this humongous prickly pear at someone's front yard. So I couldn't resist. I pulled over and took a picture. That's a big one. Cattails. Cattails, cattails, cattails. My goodness. Cattails are probably one of the most overlooked and probably the most useful wild plants. I mean, it's just way, 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 way up there. This is amazing. Almost 6,500 pounds of starchy flour per acre that you can get from cattails if you had like a marshy area. Or maybe even perhaps if you want to be entrepreneurial, I've thought about this, you could technically flood a field, kind of like they do with rice paddies, and if you had some sort of water source, potentially you could just plant that whole field in cattail, harvest it. It might be an up-and-coming food product. You find a way to process it. Some people have. You can dig into it a little bit, but that might be a good business idea. 6,500 pounds of starchy flour per acre, that's more than any other crop in the world. Incredible. The cattail pollen, when the head is just starting to develop, makes a really good flour additive. And the shoots, they cook up like asparagus. Now I'm going to tell you my wonderful story. One time I was harvesting these cattails by the edge of a nice little picturesque pond, and I went ahead and I pulled up this one plant thinking it was the cattail. It wasn't. It was a wild iris. And I thought, you know what? And I just took that root and I bit a piece off of it in my mouth. And just I thought, I kind of chewed it up and I swallowed it and I thought, good grief, my throat burns like crazy. My mouth burns, my lips burn. Cattail is not supposed to do that. And I did a little more further study and I looked at it, I looked at the plant and I'm like, oh, good grief. I think this might be an iris. And without sparing you the gory details, let's just say that I helped reintroduce it back into the environment. Because I really wanted to get it out of me. It wasn't not a fun experience. And I immediately raced home and I got myself a big old cup full of charcoal water and doused that down. And I was none the worse for wear. I didn't even have diarrhea or things like that some people do, because I caught it really quick. That's probably the only time in my life I've picked something poisonous like that and ate it. I was so careless. I don't know why I was so careless that day, but I was. I want to show you the difference between an iris and a cattail, though. This is important. Notice the iris leaf, how it's shaped the way it is. It's flat, and it's fat in the middle and thin on the edges. The cattail is going to be curved at the base. And I'll show you this. This is even more compelling. Notice how the iris right here comes together in flat leaves. They come together flatly like that, and they kind of spread out almost in a V shape. Look at the cattail. Look at that shoot, how it's round, and all of those leaves are cupped around each other. Once you see that, you'll never do that again. I'll never do that again. I mean, my goodness. But you're going to see that stalk is round. The iris right there, totally different. Yes, sir?
They say you can make more alcohol out of cattail than you do corn.
Okay, you can make alcohol out of cattail than corn. So maybe a good ethanol.
A good
source for ethanol, absolutely. Maybe people in Louisiana or Mississippi or something, maybe all those swamps and stuff, you might be able to make something out of that. Berries. Now, there are all kinds of berries in the wild. All of them very, not all of them. Some of them very edible and some of them very uninedible. You can see a nice selection here. Anyone ever find a wild blueberry in the wild and eat it? Woo! How about a wild strawberry? Oh my goodness. I don't care how good your domesticated strawberries are. I still think a wild strawberry, the flavor and the smell and the whole experience, so much better. Incidentally, they love to grow right next to poison ivy. I continue to find that all the time. Like, good grief. They love the same environment or soil type. But anyway, wild strawberries, incredible. What about pawpaws? Anyone ever eat a pawpaw? Yeah. Anyone who does not know what a pawpaw is? You can be brave. We're all friends here. Oh, good. Good. Oh, you're going to, this is great. So for the past like maybe 12, 13 years, I've been obsessed with pawpaws. And you can ask my friends, they'll tell you. I'm a pawpaw enthusiast, and I've been doing my best to spread pawpaw awareness everywhere I go. I even made t-shirts. I made a series of t-shirts that were pawpaw related and just would like wear them around. And I go to pawpaw festivals, and I'm a card-carrying member of the Ohio Pawpaw Growers Association. Should I keep going? I think pawpaws are incredible. It's this amazing fruit that grows all over the temperate, well, not all over, but over a huge chunk of temperate America. This is the fruit that started it all for me. When I was 8 years old, my third cousin and I were walking through a woods, and he climbs up a tree all of a sudden. He goes, pawpaws! And he grabs them. He knew what they were. Pulls them down, and we tried to eat them, but they weren't ripe. But I thought, good grief, this is really weird-looking fruit. These are ripe in late summer through fall, and you got it. If you find a good pawpaw patch, guard it with your life, and frequent it, especially at least where I was in Ohio. It might differ for you slightly, but like in Ohio, I'm born and raised for most of my life. It would be like, I don't know, August, mid-August to mid-September typically. But you're going to watch those, and you're going to make sure, see if they're fragrant and they're soft. You can ripen them on the kitchen table, but pawpaw tastes like custard, mango, and banana all mixed together. Ooh-wee! It's the most it's incredible. The only better thing I've ever had in my life was a mango grown in the Caribbean from a tree that was picked that morning. Oh, my word. But pawpaws come close. Nutritional value is a lot like a banana. Pawpaw can be frozen, but it does have a very short shelf life. But you can also grow pawpaw trees, and there's a whole movement of that. University of Kentucky has done a lot of work on that. They think they have several hundred acres under pawpaw right now. Who lives in a place where palm trees can grow? We got like two people. All right. Okay. Well, lucky you, because wouldn't that be great to live there? We're moving on. Palm trees are incredible and often a very overlooked wild food source. You can get so many different products from palm trees. You can get coconuts and all these dates and all these other items from palm trees, and it's often overlooked. I can't tell you how many times I've been in tropical places and you just see piles of coconuts laying around and nobody's using them. Coconuts are amazing. This is my father-in-law and I. We were in the deep, darkest jungle of Puerto Rico, and we found these coconuts, and we hacked up a whole bunch of them, about 25 of them. Had a wonderful feast. And you can use the machete to cut the end off like that. Good stuff. Wild grapes. Wild grapes are awesome. The Bible even talks about wild grapes, not very favorably, actually. But I think it's some sort of an analogy. But I'm telling you that wild grapes are awesome as a wild foods forager. My wife and I have made all kinds of products from wild grapes. It's a lot of work. I'm not gonna lie. It does take some effort, but the rewards are great. Wild grapes can often grow in abundance. They often taste better after the first frost. And this is true for a lot of fruits. After the first frost, a lot of the starches in the fruit are going to convert to sugars. And it's just a great little window of time to get the sweetest fruit possible. There's many different wild varieties. You can see Fox, Riverbank, Summer, all of those. Muscadine, you've probably heard of those. Here's a little trick. If you get wild grapes, they can have this element in there called tartrate. And it's kind of where you get the word tart, maybe. At least that's what I imagine. And tartrate is this sludgy substance. So what you're going to do is you're going to juice those grapes. Now, I'd do it in a big bin, and you can put like clean, super hyper clean rubber boots on. And you can do it barefoot if you like. Do it old school. You get all that juice, and you strain it, and you put it in a big old pitcher, and put it in the refrigerator overnight. And you're going to let that sludge settle to the bottom, all that tartrate. It can make a burning sensation on your mouth if you don't do that. In the morning, you're going to open up the refrigerator and you're going to pour off all that clear grape juice and stop just before that sludge starts spilling over. And then you've got the good stuff. And then dispose of the juice. Wild grapes can be very strong flavored and extremely aromatic, just like wild strawberries. They make great jelly and juice. All grape leaves are edible. And they make great wraps for Mediterranean food. You ever eat grape? Grape leaves on, oh man, absolutely. Studies show that tea from the leaves has promise in alleviating diarrhea, thrush, hepatitis, stomach ache, and you can reference the footnotes for more information. So here's the real deal. There are some lookalikes to grapes, but to the untrained eye, and you do not want to pick the wrong thing. The seeds look like that on the left, almost like a pear, but it's kind of split down the middle. You'll see that the seed is kind of, it's actually like two seeds, or you'll see it's kind of like bifurcated right down the middle. And then on the right, you're going to see that grape leaves have different variants, but they always kind of look a bit like a maple leaf. Here are some imposters. Pokeweed. Pokeweed does not grow on a vine. It grows on this tall leafy plant. There's moonseed, Carolina coral bead, Virginia creeper, earl leaf, greenbrier, porcelain berry, and there's lots more. Make sure you know what you're getting. But the seed and the leaf are the best way that I use. And also just make sure it's on a vine. If it's on a vine, it's got the seeds, the leaves, and make sure the stems are brown or green. If the stems are blue or purple or red or any other color, don't go for it. All right, here's another one. Now some of you, I don't know this audience. I mean, some of you might be just like grizzled veterans. You probably know a lot more than I do. And some of you might have never foraged anything in the wild. So it's probably this broad range. And really what I'm trying to do here is just kind of give an overview of some of the things you can get, but really in the end, I just want to inspire. just want to inspire you to get out there and try something. You know, do your research, but get out there and just try to eat something or try to use something in the wild, because it's a great experience. Really, really neat. American persimmons. Anyone ever eat an American persimmon? They're small, about the size of a quarter maybe. Yeah. Yeah. Did you like it? Yeah. Have you ever eaten an unripe American persimmon? Did you like that? That will turn your face inside out. You have never tasted something so tart and astringent in your whole entire life. It's a great experience. It's just an experience. You should try it. A friend of mine and I, we were walking a couple months ago. We were walking through the woods, and I was like, hey, there's some unripe persimmons. You want to eat one? So we did. And it was, you know, it's just, you got to experience, you know, all of life. So American persimmon. They are super duper duper sweet. In fact, they're sweeter than the Asian persimmons, which are larger. Rupus, the fruit is ripe when it's soft and often wrinkly and almost looks rotten. That's when you about want to eat it. It's like the soggy, wrinkly kind of thing. It almost looks like I wouldn't want to eat it. That's when you need to eat it. A mature tree produces about 55 pounds of fruit annually. Really neat thing about this, a persimmon tree came down in some land where I was living, and it had a black spot in the middle, which was heartwood, and that is a true ebony. It's one of the hardest woods out there. The ebony woods are the hardest woods in the world. That's an American persimmon, but it's got to be 100 years old for that. And I wouldn't want to cut one down just to get that. I want to keep it and keep using the fruit. As you can see, I want to make sure that I'm timely here, so I'm going to have to kind of blitz through some of this stuff. I want to give you opportunity for questions, to ask questions that I don't know the answer to. You see all of these elements here. Just absolutely incredible. Seeds make a good coffee substitute. You can roast those. As a matter of fact, back in the Civil War, soldiers, when they ran out of coffee, they would use persimmon seeds. The leaf, persimmon leaves, fantastic. You'll see the bark here. Persimmon bark is pretty easy to tell. It looks like a whole loosely clustered stack of bricks or blocks, kind of haphazardly thrown together. And the leaf is there. The leaves are great. You can pick those and save them as a good herbal tea. And have a lot of benefits as well. More information in the footnotes. Wild plums. Anyone ever eat a wild plum or find a wild plum? Ooh, wow, that's pretty cool. Wild plums can give you a lot of fruit if you're able to keep the pests away or get lucky enough to do that. You can make preserves, jellies, fruit leather. There's all kinds of historical natural remedies from wild plum. You can see some of those, disinfectant. They've been used to treat sore gums, loose teeth, ulcers, asthma, upset stomach, skin abrasions. It's also, I think you would know that it's a mild laxative. If you ever eat too many plums or prunes, you probably would know that. Roots and bark mixed with scarlet thorn roots, boiled and used to treat diarrhea. These are some of the more traditional remedies that have been used from that. Do your own research on how you want to use it. There's some of the bark. You'll notice the bark. When I see the bark, it's like, man, that's a fruit tree. Just looks like a fruit tree. It's got that kind of smoothness there. American plum bark, flowers, and leaves. You can take a look at that. I'm sorry if you're trying to take pictures, but I am going to keep blitzing through all this. Here's all the different varieties. The list kind of runs off the page, but you can see all these different varieties of wild plum that grow pretty much all over the continental America. Anyone ever eat this? Passion flower fruit or maypop? Anybody? Ooh. So about 2 years ago, we moved to central Tennessee, and these things grow everywhere. There's like a whole field of them. They're just absolutely everywhere. What a flower, though. Isn't that pretty? The fruit kind of looks like, and it's about the size of a chicken egg. You can eat it when the skin is wrinkly. The leaves and flowers make a great herbal tea. It'll put you to sleep, actually, if you have a hard time sleeping. There's studies done on that. More notes at the end on that. You can easily propagate it from cuttings. So you can just cut pieces of the vine. You can root those. All kinds of research being done. It might be good for women's needs, some of those unique needs. Just all this stuff is incredible. The maypop seed oil may be good for rebuilding and maintaining healthy skin, a lot like prickly pear seed. Might make a good companion oil for that, possibly. Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. More information at the end. I'm not exactly sure. Why does that keep doing that? I wonder. It seems I had it all like arranged, and all of a sudden the pictures were like jumbling together. But at any rate, that should say ground cherries. Anyone ever eat a ground cherry? Some people call them husk berries or all kinds of things. It's kind of one of those husk tomatoes, you might say. Ground cherries are great. We were just talking about those, weren't we? Now this is very important. Only eat ripe fruit of a ground cherry. Only. You'll see, it has this kind of this biodegradable wrapper on it that pops open at times. But you'll see them. They look like little Chinese lanterns hanging upside down. In fact, you see on the left there, you see those little husks right there? Well, inside are the cherries. Not true cherries, but that's what they're called. Make sure you only eat the ripe fruit. It's poisonous if it's not ripe, and any other part of the plant is poisonous. They can keep up for 3 months in the husk. Single plant can produce 300 fruits. I've collected the seeds from these, and think about, do the math on that. You plant 100 plants times 300, whew, you're going to have yourself a lot of fruit. Not that hard to do. It's all kinds of benefits listed at the bottom there. Improving vision, lowering cholesterol, regulating blood sugar. A lot of studies being done on that. Notes in the bottom. Does taste really, really tropical too, by the way. Kind of tastes a little pineapple-y, which is kind of neat for places that aren't tropical. You want to make sure you're not picking horse nettle. The horse nettle right here on the left has got thorns, and it looks like little tomatoes. Sometimes it's green and yellow streaked. You don't want to eat those. You're going to have a very bad day. Make sure that your cherries are in a husk. That's probably the one look-alike you're really going to look out for. But to the trained eye, like you all are now, you're not going to pick horse nettle. It doesn't have a husk. It's got thorns. It's just totally different. Leaf structure is different. So, moving on. Wild onion, chives, ramps, and wild garlic. These are great. My kids love to pick wild onions. They do it all the time. But you got to be careful, because there are some poisonous lookalikes, a little bit. I mean, to the untrained eye. One of them is death camas, but that has flat leaves. They're a little flatter than a wild onion would be. But it could kill you dead, so don't eat those. The wild onion is a hollow. You've probably seen them. They grow wild chives and stuff. They grow everywhere, and you pick it up, and it's hollow and green. Basically, if it does not smell like an onion or garlic, do not eat it. Do not eat it. So you're going to take that and crush it in your fingers and smell it. If it doesn't smell like onion or garlic, don't eat it. If you don't have a sense of smell, give it to someone who does, and they can tell you. All right. Mayapple. Anyone ever eat a mayapple? These you only can eat when they're ripe. Make sure they're ripe. Don't overdo it on these, but it's a nice little snack. Don't just go hog wild and eat like 100 of them. And you got to kind of tend the mayapples too. You got to check them out. I like the hot mushrooms. And I always knew that I was running out of time to find the mushrooms when the mayapples started covering the forest floor. And they do that. They kind of come together in a kind of an imbricated fashion, like the leaves start touching each other. And then you got to push all the leaves aside to see if there's any shrooms under there. And it gets really difficult. Tastes a little bit citrusy, tropical, pineapple-y. Some people say it tastes like Starburst candy. It is very tropical. Mushrooms are another thing you can forage. You got to be very careful about mushrooms, of course. You're probably aware that there's poisonous ones. I know there's some questions about mushrooms. Some people, and I've thought this too, in the book of Genesis, says that, you know, God gave us every plant that bears seed, and so that's what we should only eat. And so there's some thought maybe we shouldn't eat mushrooms. To my knowledge, I have not found anything in the writings of Spirit of Prophecy against mushrooms. I've looked pretty hard, even went to the White Estate, checked other things. I have not found anything in Spirit of Prophecy against mushrooms. I will leave that up to you to decide what you like to do. But there's a lot of nutrition and medicinal qualities in mushrooms, and I'll leave it at that. It's in your corner. But you want to make sure you're picking the right thing. Of course, morels in the top left are what everyone loves. Also, chicken of the woods is a great one. Shaggy manes, chanterelles, lion's mane. I found some really nice lion's mane recently. That's more of a medicinal mushroom, but it is edible, and oysters as well. I'm not going to go too deep into mushrooms because that's a whole world right there, but I just want to let you know that there's a lot of options out there, not just the morels or chicken of the woods. There's a lot more. But do your research. Find a good book. Buffalo gourd. This is something that I picked just a few miles from here. I got a whole bunch of them here. In fact, down on the table, I invite you to take a look at some of the stuff that I found. This is a cucurbit, and it grows wild in Texas, the Southwest, all over the place. It even grows as far north as Michigan. The seeds are edible. I've eaten them, collected a whole bunch of them, roasted the seeds, and they taste like popcorn. It has a really popcorny kind of taste. Really good. The fruit in this shape is not edible. The small, immature fruits are edible. Apparently, I haven't eaten those. I've just eaten the seeds. But as it is, it's kind of fibrous. And actually, people call it fetid. You know what the word fetid means? In fact, you can even see it in the name, foetidisma. It's not going to taste good when they're large. But that grows all around here in Texas. I mean, everywhere. I found these at a stoplight. I'm not kidding. I pulled over. I'm like, hey, look at that. The root of buffalo gourd is starchy. It's edible. It has a kind of a fibrous core, but you can remove that. Cook it like potatoes. Totally edible. And the seeds as well. We're going to keep rocking. Texas bull nettle. Anyone ever tangle with a Texas bull nettle? Does anyone know what well, good. This is the nastiest plant I've ever found, but I couldn't help myself, and I collected some seeds, which I have them right here. The seeds are entirely edible, raw or baked. They're fantastic. This is the worst plant I've ever encountered in my life. I accidentally brushed my arm on it as I was foraging one day. This was years ago in Texas, and the spines got on my arm. And it was like getting stung by a jellyfish. I've never had that happen, but I imagine that's what it felt like. My whole right side of my body was just in severe burning pain. It was like electrical pulses going up and down my arm. Huge white and red welts popped out. It was a terrible experience. But the show had to go on, and I still collected a whole bunch of seeds because I couldn't let that stop me. The root's also edible, too. You can bake it like a potato, and once again, it has a really fibrous core. If you get the spines on you, you can put baking soda on it to help neutralize that. Put the seed pods. You'll see up here. See those seed pods right there? You're going to pick them when they're looking really ripe. You're going to snip them with gloves and tongs. Put them in a paper bag. Close the top of the bag and let them dry out, and then they will explode. They'll just go boom, 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 and you'll contain all the seeds. When it's all done, you can drain off the seeds and use them. You can also plant it outside your windows to repel robbers. People do that. They plant it around their house. So, all right, I'm going the wrong direction. Here we go. American groundnut. Anybody have experience with American groundnut? Apios americana? Yeah, this is the plant I looked for 10 years. I looked and looked and looked and never was able to find it until back in September of last year. I finally found it. It only took me 10 years. There it is. Apios americana. I was so excited. You'll find as you're foraging and you're looking for things and you really want to find something, when you find it, it's almost like an old prospector finding a new gold vein. I mean, just like, oh! There have been times in the woods where I've been like, yes! Yes! I'm the only one there, hopefully. So excited. It's just like doing backflips. This has little root balls you can see here. See on the right there, bottom right, those roots are all connected, and you cook up like potatoes. And they're only seriously cultivated in Japan, but I suppose you could and start it in America. How about that? Okay, spring beauty is another one. I'm going to go a little bit faster here just so that we have some time for questions. Spring beauty, okay, yeah, that's a good one. It's also like the American groundnut, you can eat the roots. Some places, spring beauty grows really thick. But be careful when you harvest spring beauty because in some places it is rare. Make sure you don't over-harvest. That's one thing you want to do. You want to leave plants. You don't want to take every plant that you want there. Leave plants so that you'll have this posterity that'll give you more and more food for years to come. Here's some of my favorite wild medicinal plants. Mullein is a really good one. White willow is something that I've collected as well, the bark of. Mullein is fantastic. It's so good for the lungs and so many things like that. I have a whole container of mullein seeds there that you can see. Nettle is a great one. Use that tea. I'm going fast. I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but I really want to try to get through this and then get an opportunity for questions. Rose hips. Make sure you're picking rose hips. They do look like a red berry, and they might pick the wrong thing. It's a good idea to observe the plant throughout the season to know for sure it's a wild rose, and then you can get the hips later. You'll know you're picking the right thing. Packed with vitamin C. Echinacea, the root, is particularly useful. Tincture can be used as throat spray. You can buy that at Walmart, so that's a totally legit herb. Elderberry. Elderberries must be cooked before using. And elderberry syrup is a very popular natural remedy. I'm sure you've probably used it or you've heard of it. In fact, I even supplied a recipe for elderberry syrup. It does call for cinnamon. And cinnamon, personally, I believe that cinnamon's okay, is used as a remedy. And I would recommend, though, that Ceylon cinnamon be used rather than cassia, because Ceylon doesn't have all the harmful compounds that cassia does. And you can buy Ceylon cinnamon at like a Hispanic grocery store. I tend to see it there more often than not. There's some syrup hacks. You can add rose hips, echinacea root, lemon zest, bee balm, malum leaves, pleurisy or butterfly weed. You can add all those things too. All right, I'm sorry, but I'm moving right along. Sassafras is another one. This is an example of how you need to do your research. I've used sassafras tea for years. It's one of the only plants in the world with 3 to 4 leaf variations. There's one like this, there's one like this, there's one like this, and there's one like that, all on the same plant. Really interesting. Root beer used to be made from it. I have a whole jar of sassafras root bark that I collected in Missouri, and you can give that a smell. It is heavenly. It's one of the best smells I've ever smelled. So feel free to stick your nose in there and inhale deeply. Let's see. Sassafras was banned, and the safrole, which is an active agent in sassafras, was banned in the 1960s and 70s in America by the FDA because they force-fed a lot of lab rats extremely high amounts of safrole, and they developed liver cancer. There's no conclusive evidence that it's happened in humans. However, it's considered likely carcinogenic by the FDA. Interestingly enough, though, safrole is also present in cinnamon, nutmeg, black pepper, fennel, and basil, and those ingredients are still legal to use. Study it out for yourself and come to your own conclusions. The sassafras is a traditional remedial herb. Pawpaw is a great one. A study was done by Purdue University by Jerry McLaughlin, and he found that of all the plants that he assayed around the entire world, thousands of plants for anti-cancer fighting effects, the one that he found was the highest was pawpaw, found in the seeds and twigs. It was growing in his own backyard. He went all over the world, and it was growing in his own backyard. This is not a medical claim. He has done a lot of things on it, and I've provided links here that you can follow to do your own research, but it's quite remarkable. Next level is cultivating or tending your own wild garden, which is what I'm doing here. Over the years, I've collected hundreds and hundreds of wild seeds to develop my own seed bank, and you're just seeing a portion of it here. You can walk by the table and take a look of all the different types of wild seeds that I've collected. I just think it's kind of neat. You can kind of sequester your own little seed bank. It's your own. The wild plants from all over the country. As you see, the X marks the spot. This is my special pawpaw patch back in Ohio. And if you're smart enough to figure out where that is, you can have them. So, here's a wild planted garden. Lots of beautiful flowers and herbs. And there is a lady tending her wild nettle in England. You'll see how I collect my seeds and I label them. I used to do the top left. I just used to write the name up there, but now I put the GPS coordinates when I find it so I know exactly where it is. Just like that. I get those containers from Dollar Tree. Take an extra bag when you go foraging. I found this the other day. This is 3 days ago. I found this while I was doing some foraging here in Texas. It looked like that. Take an extra bag and do what you can to clean the place and make it look better than when you arrived. This is my daughter helping me with the willow bark. My son and my daughter helping me with something there. My son helped me collect some cottonwood seeds for my collection. There's my daughter and I. We're making a salve or an ointment for poison ivy. We're making it out of jewelweed right there in a blender. And, of course, my father-in-law and I doing some foraging of our own. In my favorite place in the world. So be safe and have fun. Here are links that are all provided. You can go deeper into any of the claims, or not claims, but possibilities, the possible uses for these plants. Here's some helpful links. I made Mr. Dillon's seed collecting guidelines and tips. You can follow a link to that. A great place to start is Eat the Weeds. There's a link there. Learn Your Land and Alexis Nicole Nelson. Those are all really good foragers and people that are going to help you understand where to get started. Questions? I may not have the answer for it, but I invite you to pose some questions. Yes, sir. Yeah, so stinging nettle, he's asking about stinging nettle. How do you use stinging nettle fresh? You can juice it, just fresh right away. You can blanch it, put it in the boiling water and then ice cold water, and then you can use that like you would use spinach, just wherever you'd use spinach. You can also cook it, the fresh stuff, like you'd use spinach. Yes, sir?
Sting you at all.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so use the stinging nettle tops, and I didn't mention that, but you're absolutely right. That's the best part, it's the most tender. Yes, ma'am. I think actually you were first. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah. She wanted to know if Ceylon cinnamon, I'm not a chef, but Ceylon cinnamon, is it better than cassia for cooking? Yeah, it would be. It's milder, though. It's not going to have the strong cinnamon flavor as much, but it doesn't have a lot of those harmful compounds that might hurt your liver. That's how I understand it. Yes, in the red sweater. Well, some people have used elderberry fresh, and it's highly advised that you cook it. It's gonna neutralize some of those powerful compounds in there. It's just highly advised that you cook it. I don't know exactly what happens to you if you don't, but I've always followed what I've learned from others. So yes, sword fern. Sword fern will neutralize the stinging nettle sting. I love that.
Yeah, and then
fantastic.
The horse chestnut, I noticed that the picture.
Make sure you're not picking buckeye. Ohio buckeye can look like a chestnut to the untrained eye, too. But yeah, you're safer with more spines, as far as what I know. I'd do your research on that one. That's probably a Google question right there. Yeah, he was wanting to know if horse chestnuts, you want to eat the ones with more spines or ones with less. Back here, pokeweed. Okay, so traditionally, particularly in the South, people eat it. It's called poke salad, or that's what they call it. They eat the very young, very, very brand new young leaves. But as soon as it gets any red on it whatsoever, it becomes quote unquote poisonous. Pokeweed is one that I know a lot of people eat the greens. And you got to cook them real well, and you got to do it just right. It's a little tricky. It's not one that I ever recommend that someone does because of the danger there. Eat any of the stalk, the stem, or the root. The root is absolutely poisonous, and any of the red on there is going to be a problem. Some people do eat the pokeweed greens, though, when they're very, very young, like 2 inches, 3 inches long. That's about it, the leaves. And it's just coming out. And you got to be sure you know what you're picking, because there's other things that might look like pokeweed that aren't. And as young plants, they might look very similar, so got to be careful. Does kind of look like elderberry a little bit too. Yep. I know we kind of need to be done here, but the next segment is starting, I think, in like 10 minutes. Is that correct? I'll tell you what. We'll take a couple more questions. I'm going to stand here just so, for audio versus sake, we'll kind of stop the presentation. But I'm going to stand here in front of the table. If you got more questions, feel free to come by. We'll just take one right here. Okay. Cool. Well, thank you all very much. I'll meet you here at the table, and this will conclude the presentation. Thank you. God bless.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.com. .org